contrary to popular wishes, only is again I'm said the trucks is a year fillable mark on our national start to fear it with the last thing left. It's time to talk to this network as well as to fill what. I'm Paul Hudson.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Mike Saunders.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
Hooray! And in this episode, which is number 7, gosh, time is flying, we're talking Ubuntu Lucid. It's out today / tomorrow. We're recording it yesterday in your time, if that makes any sense to you whatsoever. Steam may be coming to Linux. And we're reporting back on our results of our Zed Shell You Dare Us challenge. And of course, our much favourite feature, the open ballot. What is Linux's greatest threat?
Let's kick off with the news. So Lucid Linux Ubuntu 10.04 is here. Well, it's one day away as we're recording this podcast, but by the time you hear this, it should probably have hit your favourite mirrors so you can get downloading ISOs and having fun.
Wow.
It's been a bit of a controversial release, mainly because of the changes to the GUI, moving buttons around, without consulting every single person in the community. But what do you guys think? Been using it?
Have they moved the buttons back now?
The buttons are, the title bar buttons are still on the are on the left of the title bar now, but they're in a sensible order. The close button is on the edge of the window, just like every other operating system in the history of the world. So they have responded to some of the changes that...
I just love the fact that that's what we call controversial in the Linux world.
You know, not flame wars devoted to that particular issue. Thousands of comments all over the internet.
There's the music store as well, and it's always controversial when a Linux company tries to make money.
Yeah, that's
from
true.
MP3s.
Yeah, that's true. MP3. Very terrible MP3s. None of us ever touch them.
It's a lighter colour now, isn't it? It's not brown anymore. It's
dark purple.
It's all purpley.
Well, it's not much lighter, is it?
Well, it's less brown.
It's less brown, yeah.
In one way, it could be just like this country. Being lighter.
The default theme is a kind of dark, a black type of setup for the menus and for the title bars. But you can also switch to another one, which I think is called Radiance.
That's what I'm thinking of.
It's very light. But it does look quite OS X-y from a distance. Well, Leopard.
It looks very OS X-y, but it's very nice. It's really nice to see the orange go. I like it. But yeah,
aren't they running the risk though that I think in a couple of months Apple will announce 10.7 as under production, and they'll show screenshots that's kind of moved on a little bit, and the bunch
looks brown.
They're going to look a bit dated.
Brown and orange.
I think the music store is particularly interesting because I think a month ago Magnatune's founder announced they were sending a check for $600 to the GNOME Foundation because every time he bought a song through Magnatune, which is a great service, on Rhythmbox. Rhythmbox and a little header saying, oh, it's Rhythmbox, by the way. And they got a cut of all that, every song they sold.
Right.
And Ubuntu annoyingly changed that referrer from Rhythmbox to Ubuntu, therefore depriving Rhythmbox of another $100.
Right.
I'm not sure what's going to happen now to Rhythmbox because now it's all Ubuntu music store, isn't it?
Yeah, that's not very fair, is it?
They've already obviously got enough money as it is.
They should be able to tell. I mean, yeah. Well... Yes, I don't know.
Could you hack Rhythmbox to change it back?
Yeah, do what you like.
Say it's from iTunes instead.
Wait, $600 for that's in the sales isn't a great deal of money, but it's still free money to help developers, encourage them, you know, you're doing a good job, lads, here's some money.
Absolutely.
Also,
yeah.
Magnatune's pretty trailblazing in its music model. You know,
I love it.
It would be nice if Canonical had managed to do some of that.
Well, I know, yeah, but the difference is it's not what you call popular music. It's not mainstream music, because it's sadly. Someone actually emailed me because we were saying Magnatune and he thought we were saying something else entirely. It's called magnatune.com and it's awesome. Go and check it out. It's all really, really awesome licensing. And FLAC and everything you want, really.
Did he think we were talking about some torrent site or something?
I know.
Moving on, Steam, Valve's digital distribution platform that a lot of people use to get games, could be coming to Linux. They've made a closed beta version for OS X, and some people, some enterprising folks, have dug around and found references to Linux and Linux binaries and stuff like that. I've never used Steam in my entire life, so I don't know much about it. But any of you guys?
It's a way of getting games on Windows.
Yeah, off
the
internet.
It sort of packages things quite nicely for you and makes things easy to install.
Yeah.
I like it. I mean, I haven't actually launched it for ages. Actually, ever since I bought Bioshock through Steam on my Windows machine, which the DRM in Bioshock, unlike the rest of Steam, was incredibly draconian. It was secure ROM and it messed up my whole system. I couldn't get it to work. But
Graham's system and messed up shocker.
Yeah. but before then, you know, you have a Steam account, you buy a game, you buy a Valve game on Steam, and you can run it on any machine where you log into your Steam account. It's very nice. I mean, the most exciting, I mean, I'll believe it when I see it if there's going to be a Linux version of Steam. But there's no real technical reason why not, because they've ported their Valve engine using OpenGL 2 OS 10 allegedly. So there's not going to be any real difference in getting that to work on Linux, and it'd be great if we got games like Half-Life 2 on Linux. They had some of the best games ever made.
I mean, how does it work? I don't really know. They say there's 1,100 games available on Steam. If they make a Linux version, does that mean instantly all of those games?
No.
So
what we know so far, the way Steam works is you buy it through your account, your email address, and then you can go anywhere and log in as that and download the same games to your machine.
Right.
As long as you only play them on one machine at one time, you can have as many copies as you like installed anywhere in the world.
Okay.
Very, very clever. They're going to port their source engine, which powers Counter-Strike and powers Half-Life and powers Portal and powers a few other things, to OpenGL, they have done. And that's it. All the other games, like, you know, Civilization or whatever, or Bejeweled even, are still written in DirectX, and that's not going to change.
Right, so some of those 3D games that are
It's being ported to Mac, so at this point, nothing may come to Linux.
Yeah.
And even if Steam does come to Linux, we still only may get a handful of games. And, you know, it's going to be a good thing to have, but even the Mac, which has a much, much larger desktop market share, is still struggling to establish itself as a gaming platform.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I made a GL framework a while back, and it doesn't work on some people's machines because of compis. Just doesn't work. You won't get that on Mac. Things will just work because it's a stable platform, whereas on Linux, you know, oh, you're running compis, blah, 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 blah. Emerald are you? Well, that's just not going to work then. And I can see, even if it makes the Mac as an OpenGL port, it doesn't mean even then Linux is going to just work out of the box.
And even on the Mac, it's not working with Intel integrated chips and things like that.
So, yeah, your lower-end stuff. Well, that kind of, to be fair.
Well,
you've got a lame GPU, it just will not work.
Yeah. Mac owners thinking, I've got a Mac, I can run Half-Life 2.
On my 10-year-old Mac Mini as well.
Team Fortress.
Yeah, so even then it's limited somewhat.
Can you not just turn off texturing or something? Like an old 3D game.
Yeah, you can to a degree. Yeah. It would be nice if it turned into a kind of an app store. You know, so someone like LGP gets involved and you can buy the games really easily.
Well, there's no reason why they couldn't. Other than, you know, I guess Steam will start saying, hey, this is a Mac-only game. You know, Windows users can't have it, at the very least. And then Linux-only games, they do port it to Linux. What they've found, basically, is a few references to Linux in the shell scripts.
Right.
And it may possibly be they've just got that shell script from somewhere else.
Well, some of the older games would have had Linux servers with them, wouldn't they? So there could be some legitimacy in the old versions having a Linux server for multiplayer game. That some of the old Linux references knocking around from then.
Well, I hope it comes to Linux. Any game coming to Linux would be a welcome change.
Linux gaming is pretty dead at the moment.
It's pretty dead, yeah. Apart from Brain Party.
And X-Bill is good as well.
Do you see the
Pink ponies.
People blame you for X-Bill, you realise. Because you mentioned it a few podcasts ago, and they're saying they've now got RSI thanks to you.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they should be playing it on a touchscreen device. Yeah. Stop using a mouse with it. Maybe they're trying to use a trackpad or something horrific like that. And finally, there is an ODF plugin for Microsoft Office so that Microsoft Office can read files in open document format generated by OpenOffice and StarOffice. It's always been a closed source, but it used to be freely available. Now that Oracle has taken over Sun, they have decided to start charging $90. $90 per seat for this plugin, and you have to order a minimum of 100, so that's $9,000.
One million people. 16 terabytes.
So, yes, it's not been a very popular move. What are they trying to do? Have they had enough?
That's awesome. I love it.
What idiots. What can you say?
Are they trying to make money? Is that what they're doing?
Or
are they trying to make themselves look silly?
I think they're trying to make money, but I don't think this was a massive, super popular project anyway. It was just some little thing on the sidelines. There is actually a free and open source ODF to Windows converter at odf-converter.sf.net. It's on SourceForge. So, you know,
Is that the one sponsored by Microsoft partly?
I don't know.
Because they did put some money towards a converter.
Well, towards an open, free as in speech
open source. I think it's designed to help interoperability generally.
Right.
Not sure how far it got, though. But obviously Sun's one is going to be the canonical one, isn't it? And the fact that it's now not free is rubbish.
Well, yeah, maybe they're thinking, you know, after Oracle's acquisition of Sun, they've just sent in a load of managers to say, what money can we wring out of some of these things before we give up on it?
They probably thought, you know, OOO is such a market-dominant position now. What can we do to capitalise on this awesome position we've got?
I think we've got to blame Sun, actually. I mean, they should never have made it closed source. If they hadn't done it closed source, we wouldn't actually have this problem. You know, you can't blame Oracle for trying to make money out of something. You know, Sun really should have made it open source. Obviously, it's got some clever proprietary trickery in there, and they've been able to make a deal with Microsoft to get the proper document specification, and that's what the problem is.
Mm. But it still puts up another barrier, you know, for ODF interchange.
Yet another barrier.
Weren't MS supposed to be putting it in Office 2010? I mean, that seems to be.
It isn't in there. It's actually in 2007 as well. It's just not very good. And they've chosen quite a manky version of the format, too. They basically put the least work they can
of
do
course,
not
yeah.
get RCF. Sued. Yeah. So it is in there, but you wouldn't want to be using it, basically, is how it works out.
So it potentially deliberately screws up your documents then to say, if you just stuck with .doc or .docx in the first place, then everything would be happy. And listeners, if you've got an opinion on these news stories, or if you believe that any of our opinions are totally wrong, opinion, yeah. then...
It's all a bad choice.
I don't like it.
Yeah, come on, Polly the Parrot.
Polly the Parrot. leave us some... tell us what you know in the comments.
Which leads us on to my very favourite part of the whole podcast. It's You Dare Us.
They Dare Us.
It's You Dare Us. Now that silly shapes... programme on BBC One on Saturday evening is no longer on television, this is the closest we can get to its knockout on the Tux Radar podcast.
Oh, the hole in the wall.
Yeah, thing. Yeah. I was reading that in the newspaper. And it's a sad loss. But anyway, You Dare Us, this last fortnight has been... We've all had to use something called... Well... Z-Shell. Which, well, I'm guessing by the name, is a shell replacement for Bash. Which is what mine...
It's not just a replacement. It's a better Bash.
You know, I did actually use it for the last 2 weeks. And I just haven't used the shell that much. And I've noticed very little difference in everything that I did. RM works, LS works. I did notice one difference.
You had no prompt. My fault.
Well, yeah. But the for ages, tab completion in Bash has really annoyed me, where there are lots of... Maybe somebody can explain why this happens. When there's lots of directories that share the same pattern, so you type in T, and there's lots of directories starting with T, and you press tab. For default, on lots of distributions for a while, pressing tab in Bash doesn't do anything. It doesn't display all of the directories starting in B. It just does nothing. Z shell solved that problem for me. If I type B, it would just list all of the directories with B.
Right.
And I know Bash can do it because it used to do it, but anyway, that was the best thing about Z shell I could find.
The tab completion is actually really awesome. In Z shell, if you turn on one of the options, you can do something like, you know, tar space dash tab,
right?
And it'll list all the options to tar, and you actually press down enter, and it will auto complete that, which is a bit useless for tar perhaps because it's like you know X V F. You
just it's muscle memory, easily. Yeah.
But with GCC, where there are quite long options to tab that really long one, please, and actually it's quite easy.
Well, that's good. I mean, I suppose that's what would come with time, but. I haven't done any proper shell hacking this last fortnight.
I really like the options menu thing that starts the first time you use it and asks you, you know, how you want to really customize clear, and press. You can just skip it all together if you want. I just went straight to it and started hacking around with .z.
But I like the bit where it says, so quit now and have default settings, or quit now and ask me again next time.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was really nice. Oh, no, I'm busy right now. Come on, get off and I'll do it out later. Exactly. That's in there, which is nice.
But did anyone change their settings?
Yeah, I ran a setup correct to try and fix all the typos that I make. So
that's in Bash, though, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there we go.
Oh.
But Z shell made you look at the way you use the shell
yes,
again.
Yes, it does.
True.
Yeah.
I did investigate.
There are things I found that I think are probably in Bash if I find them, but I don't. So I know they're in Z shell because I found them, and I've got so many cool things I found in Z shell. Which I can tell you about now. I can tell you about it if you like.
Yeah, go on. I can see your list.
What did you use? I'm looking at Andrew.
Well, I went on holiday the day after we finished the last podcast, so I forgot to use it.
Oh.
You weren't using Z shell on holiday?
Certainly not, although I did think about Linux for a bit when I was on holiday, as you'll hear later in the discovery of the fortnight.
Oh. Get ready, everybody. It's going to be a good one.
Oh. I won't go that far.
Oh, okay. Well, go away then.
Linux related, which is probably more than we can normally expect.
So, Paul, you said you've got a billion discoveries.
See. Yeah, well, not discoveries, that's for later, but for this one. I really liked the alias suffixes, which I think maybe have been our feature, but I actually tried using them and they're really cool. You just do alias dash s, pi equals Python. Now you can just say some Python script and it'll run it with Python automatically, which is better for some things like .exe files that guys with mono find really hard. You can modify the bin format thing and say, actually, you know, these .exe files run with mono.
Yeah.
Or you can just say alias slash x equals mono and it'll just work. Any kind of file
that's
you like.
Great. Do they have to have the executable bit still set or
no any it doesn't execute, but it just runs it with that as a parameter.
Oh, so you're right.
So you can say, you know, alias dash s gedit txt equals gedit, and now say foo.txt open the gedit.
Right,
just works.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really, really nice. I liked the shortcut directly that you can do cd slash u slash lo slash l tab and it'll go use a local lib.
Oh, that's nice.
So you actually, but the thing is, you kind of mentally, you do type naturally the long ones because I have, again, muscle memory.
Yes,
you type
the long ones.
So you have to convince yourself to stop typing and type less and let it figure it out. The star thing works with anything. I mentioned that last time. You can do **\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\*\* to.txt. You can do vim */to.txt and it'll find it wherever it is.
It'll recurse into all those directories.
Yeah, until it finds it and open it in vim, which is really, really cool. Tetris, did you find Tetris?
No.
It's in there. It's a Tetris game and you can play it.
It's getting bloated now.
Well, no, because...
It was already 30 megs download.
The reason it was made was because someone said it's not as good as Emacs because it hasn't got Tetris. Someone made it. And the script is really short. It's about 30 or 40 lines of Z-Shell script. But you can play Tetris in Z-Shell, which is really, really cool. What I didn't like is when you type help, it goes, help, what does that mean?
Really?
As opposed to being useful. Like bash, you have to actually tell me what are the built-in commands, then it'll tell you. You're going to say help, which is a little bit lame. So generally, I was very impressed. And the only thing I didn't like was the fact that the prompt by default is useless.
Yes, you have to customize the PS1 environment variable, don't you?
What it needs is something like the Ubuntu screen thing they made, which got a nice little NCurses GUI to customize screen. It needs that for Z-Shell, really, because the menu system works, but most of the options aren't in there still.
Mm.
And I'd like to see that extended a bit further, really. But I was just very impressed with the little features.
I always feel that if I got really set up a very customized Z-Shell installation, as soon as I moved over to another machine, I'd just be completely lost. You know, like being able to type in directories to go into them without typing CD, one of the features in Z-Shell, one of the features we talked about before. You know, I could imagine myself getting so used to that when I ended up plonked at some FreeBSD machine, I'd go nuts without Z-Shell being installed.
Well, that does have Z-Shell by default, doesn't it?
Not by default, no. It has a very minimal shell.
Ubuntu didn't have it by default. I had to install Z-Shell beta to get it.
Yeah, same here.
A little bit annoying.
Mm. I haven't seen a distro that has it installed by default. No, it's still the power user shell that you have to actively seek out.
So do you think you'll keep it installed? Do you think you'll become your default shell?
Mark? Yeah, I mean, it is. It has just been for 2 weeks. It's just been there.
Yeah, I can't see why I'd switch back, really.
I haven't used these features enough because the stuff I do at the command line is basically entirely file management. So,
It's the same for me.
Yeah, if I was doing a lot more admin work, I think I definitely would, you know, explore the features more.
One thing I really wanted was... and maybe it's doable, and hopefully someone will just post a comment saying how to do it. The bind keys command is very cool. You can say bind keys, some key like, you know, caret K to do control K.
Yeah.
Do this thing, like, you know, refine the last command I typed with this. And what I'd like to do is say execute this shell command. So bind keys, you know, control K, LS, whatever. So I press control K to do it. I think maybe it can do that. I tried it. It went no and gave up. It was trying, but didn't quite get there. So if it is doable, let me know, because I'd love to have that, you know, control shift F1 or something like that to make it do something really hard that I do all the time.
Yeah.
It'd be very, very nice.
Do you still type exit instead of pressing control and D?
Control D, control D all the way, which actually, I've changed my muscle memory, so it is possible.
Mm.
I'm quite pleased with that. It shows there's room for me yet.
Let's hope.
I'm not too old.
And you're going to stick with ZSH?
Once I can figure out how to get the prompt back to the way Bash had it, which I'm so used to, I don't want to change, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Although someone said you can get the time in your prompt if you really
you
want
to. You can do
to.
Everything.
I'm sure
it's all
you can probably play Tetris
operations.
In the prompt.
Yeah,
backslash you for the host username or something. So.
Yeah, I did find that. Although, actually, all that stuff actually works in the list of completion stuff too. It can customize all the completion text. You can put any of those things in there as well.
Right.
Which is quite nice, but I can't even get my prompt right. So that's what I miss. There is a tool for Bash. The Bash, it's a GUI. So actually customize all of Bash inside a GUI. Add this, disable that, whatever.
Right.
And you can customize the prompt by just clicking on things, which I kind of want. I'm a bit slow, I think. So
Clicking on things. The command line.
To configure your command line. I know it's a bit mental, but if I had that, I'd really, really like it. So I can get my prompt something useful.
Yeah, I mean, you've got an X server running, doesn't it?
Cool.
So what's the next challenge?
Oh, hold on. Oh, I'm really excited about the next one. Right, next time, what we all have to do is write an original article for tuxradar.com, which is our favourite Linux site.
Yes.
And we can write it about any FOSS topic we want to, any free and open source topic.
Anything.
So, yeah, anything. I mean, just let your brains go crazy.
That's what I do all the time.
Yeah. That's like a blank commission.
That is like a blank commission, except you don't get paid.
Oh, what, we don't get paid for it?
No. Ha-ha!
Oh, I might be busy then.
Well, you could just transcribe your rant about GNU, Slash.
Yeah, I could do. Maybe.
Why don't you write an article that's even bigger than the GNU / Linux FAQ?
pasting it.
Bigger than the US Constitution. Yeah.
On something extremely trivial.
Yeah, so I'll make it the same length as the Communist
Party. Who won the last one? Oh, yeah, the music one. Who won the last one?
I think it was me. But
I think it was me.
I think it was probably Mike.
I think it was Mike. Mike's was the awesomest.
No, based on what they said, not what you think.
I think
actually, I think there weren't so many comments, which was a bit shame. I think it was like 2 weeks or something, but it was.
There were quite a few on Twitter. With a lot for me.
No, yeah.
Did you link directly to it on Twitter? Yeah.
I said, listen to it.
Right. Did you say the same for Mike's and for mine?
No, because Mike's rubbish.
Right, well, on my Twitter account, yeah. Then, on my Bebo account, I had hundreds of listeners.
Yeah. Well, I think you both should get an honourable mention. Yours was very creative, Paul. Well good. Done.
Mine apparently wasn't music, though.
No, yours was the populist choice, whereas Mike's was the more refined, middle class.
Yours had a few off-timing things.
Yeah, it needed more work. Mine needed more work. I agree. Too random.
And with such stark admissions, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, the discovery of the week, our In the Hot Seat section, and the open ballot. What is Linux's greatest threat? All right, men, and I call you men because you are men. It is now time for discovery of the week.
Hello.
Come on, discoverers.
Wow.
Show me what you found. Mike?
Hello. That's me, that is.
Discover something quickly.
Here, I'm going to discoverify something now. I discovered VRMS, the virtual Richard M. Stallman. This is not just some random little program on some SourceForge site somewhere. This is actually, you can install this on any Debian or Ubuntu installation. It's in the repositories, VRMS. And what it does is it scans through your system looking for non-free software and then outputs a list and number at the end telling you how non-free you are.
Wow.
I was really, really proud to see that. Only 0.1% of software on my system is non-free. And one of the, there's like three packages, and one of those was the Tangerine Icon theme. So, you know, clearly
how does it know?
Oh, I don't
know. It just pinged
Stallman and he knows.
Well, doesn't every package on Ubuntu and Debian actually have to have a tag attached to it? What license is attached
to it? I guess, yeah.
Maybe just query that.
But it's, I recommend everybody on Debuntu systems to install it and run it just to see. Report your numbers back, let us know. If it says 100% non-free software, I'll be really impressed.
Join us now.
Yeah, and share the software.
Install Flash manually so that, you know, you pull one over RMS's checks.
That's a little bit of a letdown, isn't it? It could have been so much more awesomer than that, couldn't it, really?
Well, if it really complained.
I thought it was going
to speak.
I shows an animation of him eating something off his foot. Well, an ASCII animation.
This is just a command line program, but, you know, anybody presumably can go and make a full graphical X version. with
webcam version.
That was great. Top that, Graham.
Okay, mine isn't that great. Probably everybody knows it, but it's the developer tools in Chrome. Have you seen them? They're really useful if you play around with websites.
Is that the one where you get a little tab view of all the elements on the page?
Yeah, you get
pull
a tab,
them out and find out where everything was defined.
Yeah, exactly.
It's great, isn't it? Andrew, what have you... No, go ahead.
The resource manager is really impressive because...
Goats teleported? Mike had that.
Yeah, that was great.
You're so derivative.
I know. It lists everything on the website and how long it takes to load and the latency of the server, and you can sort it by latency as well. So if you do run a website, you can see which are the crappiest parts of your, what's taking the longest to load. And the resource manager even lists them by CPU and memory usage. So you can see what scripts are churning out and taking the most time. And it's really good. It's right there in the Linux version, right on your desktop. It's very cool. It's very pretty.
Does it compete much with the Firefox Google plugin, which it just, it scans everything on the site? It says things like, well, half of the CSS isn't being used. You could shrink that JPEG by at least 25%.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't make any kind of... Oh. No. That sounds good.
That's also Google, I think, actually.
You can edit your scripts in place with it, which is quite nice.
Ooh. Ooh. we'll let you pass with that one.
It's great. It's, the fact is that it's there on the browser. You don't have to do anything with it.
That's awesome. Andrew?
Yeah. Last Sunday, on a lovely sunny afternoon, sitting out in the sunshine drinking lager, I read a really quite thought-provoking essay by David Cameron in The Observer. In which he bigs up Firefox and Linux as examples of what we can do as people if we are unhindered by the large machinery of the state.
Really?
This
is
yeah.
what our Dave said.
This is what
did you fall asleep?
This is what Dave said.
Is he a white rabbit?
I thought I was unusually sunburned the next day. It starts off by saying, obviously I won't read out the whole thing, it was many, many words. As a conservative, there are two fundamental tenets on which my beliefs are based, a profound faith in my fellow human beings and a healthy awareness of the state's limitations. Blah, blah, blah. Goes on to talk about parents setting up schools when the government schools are failing. For those, and then he goes on to say, for those who still say that there is no demand, I suggest they switch on their computers. He's just been talking about schools. Look at the levels of involvement and passion liberated online. Who would have thought, for example, that so many people would spend so much time creating Wikipedia and for no reward beyond communal pleasure, just like they built the Firefox browser or the Linux operating system. In each case, the wisdom of crowds confounds the cynicism of skeptics.
See, yeah. Well, I was always told that Linux was communist.
Yeah,
by people at Microsoft.
Well,
clearly
you're
it
wrong.
Now it isn't.
It's conservative.
It's centre right. So it's
in the same European voting bloc as those mad Polish people.
can we get state
gays.
Funding then?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, no, the whole point that it's not state funded.
Yeah, but it's separating your own school is state funded, isn't it? You get money to do your own school.
Of course, yeah.
Or your own police station, whatever else you decide to do.
So we just do it and then...
Yeah, it's our own OS. Mike OS
presents an invoice.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm part of the big society now, so I'm going to keep working on my operating system.
Yes. Big society, capital B, capital S.
Yeah. I see what you're getting at.
BS. Before we get into the political side of the debate, I discovered two things. Firstly... there are lots of fair trade companies in the world, but it turns out that Wales was the first fair trade country, but using criteria defined by Wales, which I think is ace.
Right.
Okay. But what I actually found, which is actually a Linuxy thing, over the weekend, some of our sister magazines had a problem with their website. It ran out of hard disk space, and it went berserk. They have harder space, Linux didn't like that too much. The whole machine locked up, load levels went up to really, really high. I finally get into the machine to try and diagnose what's going on. I do uptime, see the system load is, 150. This machine is clearly struggling. I think, okay, what's going on? When I diagnose a problem, I fix the problem, obviously deleting some files to free up some hard disk space. Mm-hmm. Restarted MySQL because that was where the system lock had just failed, and the load level didn't come down.
Oh,
I thought, well, that's a bit strange. It seems to be returning to normal. Why is it such a high load level? I did top to see what's going on. Nothing's actually running. Nothing's using any CPU time.
Eh?
That's a bit strange. What's going on here? So eventually, what was happening, I figured it out, was that Ubuntu by default, quite smartly, when it detects a MySQL problem like that, does a complete check on the tables, which is disk bound. But not CPU bound. So you get a high load thinking, oh, this is completely buggered, but there's no CPU load because it's not doing anything really CPU intensive.
Right.
So what I did was, and this is the tip really, you can run the command show process list in MySQL, which I'd known before, unfortunately, use this time, and it prints out a list of all the queries running right now. So you could see it was doing repair tables, all the tables it was repairing. And that I realised, oh, I'd give that 5 minutes to finish and it'll come down. And it did. So fortunately, I didn't go completely crazy because I left it running because I knew what was going on. Okay. So there you go. If it ever happens to you, if you see really high load levels, but low, really low, nothing on top, you know, well, it's disk bound, something's taking place. What is it? Could be MySQL.
You see, of course, if you're sitting next to a server, you'd notice this anyway because you'd hear the hard drives thrashing and see the lights going. So somebody should make some sort of extension to SSH that when you log into a remote server, it flashes your keyboard lights based on the hard drive light as well.
That's a great idea.
So you could actually see if the light was flashing rapidly, you'd know the remote server you're on is messing around with the disk too
Wouldn't
much.
That make typing fun of it if it's with a caps lock key?
More blinking lights.
Yeah.
More blinking lights.
I'm gonna ask somebody to implement that. I can't be bothered myself.
And now it's time for our In the Hot Seat section. This time we have a special guest to spin the wheel for us.
Whoa.
It's Linus Torvalds, flown all the way here from his home in America to spin the wheel just for us.
Cheers, Linus.
Hi, Linus.
Take it away, Linus.
Hello, this is Linus Torvalds.
And I'm spinning the wheel.
Oh, and it would be Grub, but someone's crossed Grub out and written Pulse Audio.
That's not allowed.
In Graham's handwriting.
I would love to talk about Pulse Audio.
It just happened to be your turn, Graham. What an amazing coincidence that is. So, Graham, Pulse Audio, apparently, you've got 1 minute to talk about it. Take it away.
Pulse Audio is that layer that doesn't really do anything in the Linux audio subsystem. It sits on top of ALSA and between your speakers, and it's got lots of weird, funny names for lots of weird little technologies. I've had both good and bad experiences with Pulse Audio. One good experience was with Fedora 12, where I've got a surround system that uses an Audigy sound card and 5.1 speakers. In Pulse Audio, I was able to open the control panel and select 5.1 speakers as my configuration, and I actually got surround sound output. That was really, really good. But unfortunately, the vast majority of the time is spent wrestling with massive control panels that don't make any sense to me and weird combinations of configurations that involve all kinds of per-application mixers, plugins, network streaming, which I've never ever used and don't know why they ever added that. Sample conversion, I've no idea. I'd much prefer Core Audio on OS X, which does it exactly right. And if it was an inspirational speaker, it would be Peter Mendelssohn.
Well, that's very impressive. well done, Graham. Doesn't it also have like network Bluetooth, like wireless Bluetooth
and
stuff?
It does.
It's pretty advanced technology, isn't it? Just to play some sounds.
And yeah, it still has a delay of about half a second.
In fact, I started off slow because I didn't know how much I'd be able to say, but you actually realise
how much razor is built up there. What people all really want to do is just make fart apps for Linux. That's all they want to do, really. Who's next? Is it me next? Me next.
You should be.
In Das Hot Seat, yes.
All right. So, please, listeners, write in with your suggestions what we can cover in the hot seat. It's me next, so be as cruel as you like.
It's now open ballot by AG. That's me!
Hey!
It's that guy!
The open ballot, in which we asked you, the listener, what is the biggest threat posed to Linux, to Linux's growth, success, and general awesomeness? But before we get on to the important people, what about these monkeys sitting around the table? Mike?
Isn't it meteorites and stuff?
Meteorites?
From space.
Penguins.
Killer penguins.
Killer penguins from outer space.
Me, because I'm sponsored by Microsoft, apparently.
Yeah, Paul Microsoft Hudson is a bit of a threat to Linux. I think, as has been reflected in the comments, I think a lot of the community is thankfully starting to move away from the idea that one big evil company is a threat to Linux. Microsoft cannot just destroy Linux, and nor do they particularly necessarily want to right now. There are certain things that need to be fixed on the Linux side first. They are things that may be holding it back. You know, fragmentation, duplication of effort. Those are the things that are threats to Linux going further.
Apparently the biggest threats posed to Linux is exactly that belief, the belief that Microsoft isn't the biggest threat.
Oh, wow, really?
Which I thought was...
Were you reading your head, Mike?
I thought it was a really cool comment, but I neglected to write it down because I thought it was slightly mad.
Well, yeah, some people are going to believe that. Some people believe that every single thing that happens in the computing industry is to do with Microsoft or paid for by Microsoft. But I'm not interested. I don't care. There are certain things that Linux is great technology, but there are certain things that need to be fixed in Linux and improved and made more cohesive. to make it better for people. That's got nothing to do with Microsoft. We've got to get away from this.
I really think, though, there is one company that could potentially destroy Linux. Just one company by itself. I don't mean SCO.
They tried.
What if Apple open sourced its software line?
OS X?
Everything.
Well, then you just have 38 different distributions of OS X incompatible. They'd all get really slow and broken, so no, I wouldn't care.
And it's never going to happen.
It would.
I'm saying it could work.
You might as well say, well, there's no point talking about it because the end of the world is tomorrow.
Well, is it? I'm getting scared. I think if that happened, there's still enough people who really, really hate Apple for its domineering tendencies. They say, well, I'm never going to use it. You know, there are people, I'll never use Linux, I'll always run OpenBSD, or I'll never run any Unix, I'll always run BIOS. So.
Yeah, okay, so you can't kill Linux in that there may always be one person using it. I mean, for example, Halo 2 on the Xbox, original Xbox, was finally turned off multiplayer a few months ago, or weeks ago now, I forget. And there are still 13 people playing it because they haven't logged off yet. They've just left their Xboxes on, logged in, playing this game from a long, long time ago, refusing to give up.
Well, too right, yeah. Shouldn't be taken away from them.
Yeah, Halo 2.
Yeah.
So Halo 2 is probably not a threat to Linux, is it?
He's a pretty cool game. Guy and doesn't afraid of anything.
So, Graham, what did you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I initially, cynically, wanted to say Linux zealots. But,
well, coincidence. That's what most people...
Are you reading ahead, Graham?
It isn't what I'm going to say.
It's what most people said. FOSS people. I noted 7 people before I got to that big rant that was written in caps. And I was laughing too much.
I had a little think then. About 10 years ago, I think, we probably all sat around thinking similar things. What's the biggest threat to Linux? And I think we all expected by now Linux would be doing better than it is. And why hasn't it? And I think the reason why it hasn't and what is possibly the biggest threat to Linux is that there are people who make the decisions, local government, big business, are swamped by proprietary companies who are well-trained and well-able to get their products into the places that matter. And there isn't any corresponding organization in Linux that can do that. And so I think big budget PRs and big budget enterprise and business is the biggest threat to Linux. And I think until we can solve that problem, we're not going to get anywhere in the next 10 years.
Well, Renato sort of shares what you were going to say.
Who does he play for?
Linux FC.
Can we edit that rather rubbish joke out?
Not now.
It says the biggest threat to Linux's future is the fanaticism of some community members. They just don't realise that end users don't care for what they think about free and proprietary licences. End users just want to use computers and make their lives easier. End users are not programmers and don't want to be programmers and don't want to write code. Which is more or less what you were saying, but and then also what you said. Hang on. Did you just go on and write all of your opinions down on the comments? Banana Oomerang, which is almost an anagram of Graham Morrison, says we need to put more money into advertising the free and open aspects and saying there is an alternative to Windows or OS X. It's like politics. We have Labour, brackets MS, Conservative, brackets Mac, and Lib Dems, brackets Linux, and then in caps, there is an alternative.
Maybe we should get an interview with Deputy Prime Minister David Cameron.
I'd love that, yeah. Especially if we got to go on expenses. Yes, foaming at the mouth, FOSS folks, says Dan Williams, is a big problem. He says that he's a big proponent of open source software, but there's a distinct crowd out there who, for a lack of a better term, begins to foam at the mouth at the sight or mention of proprietary software. They willingly sacrifice desktop functionality that potential Linux users would expect to be present, for example, media codecs, in favour of free but less complete alternatives. Is that such a bad thing? Is that such a threat to the success of Linux? Anyone?
Cool. I was thinking of Batman. I was completely spaced out. What did he say? But big companies, right?
No, we've moved on from then. It's
Batman.
foaming at the mouth bit of phosphex. Actually, Neil Stevenson, in his quite brilliant essay, in the beginning was the command line, likens BIOS to the Batmobile.
Wow.
In much the same way that the Conservative Party have just been likened to Max.
Well, it's getting warm in here.
To save you repeating what he said, I'll just ignore what you said and say what I say. How's that? I think the biggest threat to Linux is either Ubuntu becoming the standard and eventually buggering it up, or the Linux Foundation continuing to fail to make any meaningful standards, and we continue to have fragmentation when the rest of the market's moving on pretty swiftly. Mm. We're still fighting over fairly small things. I think that's a big shame. So Ubuntu, I think, could be the bigger problem. In a way, I think it's great. Obviously, I'd love to see Ubuntu become the standard in one respect, because it makes our lives as magazine writers so much easier. How do you install software? Do this.
Yeah.
Not if you've got this, do this, you've got this, do this. That's a horrible thing to say. And it gets very confusing. But on the downside, occasionally, you know, very recently, we've seen Ubuntu make some unusual choices. And if they were the only standard Linux distro around, if they had, you know, 95% market share in the distro world, actually that would be quite a nasty thing to have. We wouldn't have any choice anymore about our future, which kind of sucks. And once they finally break through into shops or anywhere else, then it's really, really hard to follow up with someone else. You can't really come back very easily and say, Ubuntu's making the wrong choices in our PC world. Let our version of Linux come in. That's a really hard pitch to make.
Yeah.
Once they finally got in there, they're kind of entrenched. So I think if they step forward very carefully and they listen to everyone's views very carefully and that kind of thing happens, there isn't a problem. But if they continue to ignore people and get market dominance, then we've got a problem.
But the Linux Foundation, I mean, you know, they might argue, well, we've tried to put these things into place. We've got the Linux standard base. We've got the Linux hierarchy standard. And they've created all these different things to try and make single packaging across Linux distros work, but just nobody's using them.
Just for next week, I'm going to get our wheel and write LSB on every single option, because it's just a silly thing to have.
Okay,
well, Paul reckons that Ubuntu is a threat, but but Dave S. Thinks that Ubuntu
Dave
might...
Dave Stewart?
I don't know. Dave S.
I'm sorry, Andrew.
Dave S says that Ubuntu will save us from fragmentation because Ubuntu is demonstrating how a unified marketing approach based on brand recognition succeeds. Many outsiders now think that Ubuntu is Linux. Choice is good, but it can also be confusing and dilutes the message. And those sentiments are more or less agreed with by Johnville. Piece of fragmentation. Fragmentation is the big enemy. And Ubuntu is good.
There was a view a while back that actually fragmentation works on Linux's side sometimes, because people were saying, you know, the reason the Outlook Express problems kicked off in the first place was because most people had Windows, most people had Outlook Express running, and they all had the same settings by default to run ActiveX code and VBScript and stuff. So when they opened emails, you know, some hideous virus, iloveyou.vbs, would hit and take out large numbers of people. Whereas send the same thing to a Linux user, they could be running Thunderbird, they could have Evolution, they could have Pint Mutt or something hideous that, you know. It could be anything. So fragmentation actually kept us safe in some respect.
Yeah, but that's a good fragmentation. That's competition on the desktop side, isn't it? Applications, we all want that. Whereas the fragmentation of everybody having their own little user management tool to do exactly the same thing and make documentation such a mess, that's not good fragmentation.
We don't need devs competing with RPM.
We don't need that. I agree with that. And I think the Linux Foundation should put the foot down. And they have, to be fair, they have put the foot down and said
RPM. But
they put
the foot down on the wrong side.
And I think that's meaningful. If they'd said Deb, the argument would have been over years ago. The fact that they didn't, they said RPM, and no one actually cares, is a real hint. Come on, guys. Oh, LSB.
Honourable mentions in dispatches go to Connor Murphy and Hugh, who say that a threat to Linux is the apathy of hardware manufacturers. Connor says that if hardware manufacturers pre-installed Linux on the machines we can find in Harvey Norman or PC World, then everyone would know Linux, especially if you explained between the OS and the OS? Especially if you explained that between the OS and Microsoft Office and antivirus, you'd be saving €200. This would help us all by meaning that drivers and programmers would be written for Linux, and the momentum would all keep building to eventual world domination. And Hugh says that stuff not working is a problem. He mentions in particular getting games to work under Wine. Well, Hugh, I hope you're listening earlier, because obviously Steam will save all of our games worries.
Forever.
Yeah. The last word, though, surely has to go to Jason, who I should say at this point that overwhelmingly most people said, most respondents on Tux Radar said that the biggest danger to Linux was FOSS people and the zealotry. And
yet, if we were to say that, there'd be riots.
Well, we're paid for by Microsoft.
Well, Jason, I think maybe is one of those FOSS people. he says that the greatest threat to the future of Linux is a growing population of people with an aversion to thinking.
Oh, no.
They can help it, of course.
Yeah.
Just turn their brains on.
If you become a moderate to heavy Linux user, you'll need to learn something about what's going on in the background. What's bash? What's cups? How can I do something more efficiency? Linux-based systems expect the user to understand and know and think. People who become fans of Linux are people who, in general, are thinkers. Unfortunately, in a world where everyone wants everything to happen now, thinkers and tinkerers are not an expanding segment of the population. So the biggest threat to Linux are people with an aversion to thinking.
So what he's saying is Linux's rubbishness is actually its main feature. The fact they have to use cups. I mean, cups. Awful.
You have to know what
cups is terrifyingly bad.
Are you not a thinker? Do you not like thinking?
Well, exactly, yeah. So I'm obviously wrong. All right, forget LSB. Cups next week. I hate cups too.
Mindless drone for never thinking of cups.
And of course, the debate rages on at www.tuxradar.com.
And with that, we come to the end of our podcast. Don't forget the notes.
Hang on a minute.
As
there's a new Ubuntu release coming out. I don't think we've quite proved yet that we are the supreme Ubuntu gurus. I think we should.
Warthog.
No, not quite. What I want to ask you, what I want to ask you guys is...
Monkey.
You've got 30 seconds or so to name as many different Ubuntu variants as possible that exist or don't exist or have existed.
Mike Ubuntu.
Ubuntu Christian Edition.
Go on, keep going.
Ubuntu Muslim Edition.
Satanic Ubuntu.
Lubuntu.
Kubuntu.
Zubuntu. Edubuntu.
Kubuntu. Ubuntu.
Scoobuntu.
Is that what it is?
Scooby-Doo-Buntu. If not, why not?
Are we including Crunchbang and things like that?
No, it's got to have Ubuntu in the name.
Debian.
Yeah. Slack one. Well, Paul mentioned, did you say Bluebuntu then?
No.
I thought you did.
Yes, I did.
Oh, yeah.
It was me.
Well, what does it do?
It's a porn version of Ubuntu.
Nobody else.
It's for sad people.
Well, there is actually a Bluebuntu, and it's for blind users, apparently. It has a screen reader in it. So, just a reminder here. So, you've got the usual Ubuntu, Zubuntu, Mythbuntu, Edubuntu, Gobuntu, Ebuntu, Fluxbuntu, Nubuntu, and Lubuntu. But there's also...
Gobuntu.
There's also Buddha-buntu for Buddhists. These are all legitimate, by the way. L-buntu for Enlightenment. Zubuntu for IBM Z series. Z-buntu for BIOS amps. Frubuntu for forensic response. Boo-buntu, which is some French thing I don't understand. Estobuntu for Estonians. And Bio-buntu for bioinformatics workstations. Install it today.
I've got one more thing for you.
Uh-oh.
In fact, for all of you. Yeah, I've written down 12 of my favourite comments from Tux Radar so far.
Okay.
And I'm going to leave some blanks and let you fill in the blanks.
Okay.
So, let's start with something really easy. Gentoo takes what to install even with the manual memorised?
Ages?
Painkillers?
Days.
3 years is the answer.
3 years.
You don't even mention that without GCC, what?
Choice.
We'd all be programming in assembly language.
There would
Storm
be no
would
Linux.
Be redundant.
The Linux kernel would not exist. Yeah. Well done. I say to all future Windows 7 users, what?
Hello. I love you.
You are my children.
Can I have your Vista disk?
Enjoy your new expensive virus. What still boots faster?
OpenOffice.org.
Windows 7.
The answer is Chuck Norris. Corel was a failure because what?
Who were Corel again?
Because SCO bought them.
Yeah.
It was based on Debian. Tell that to Ubuntu.
Right.
Fold up your tents, pack your bags. Windows has what?
Parked its tent, parked its tank on your lawn.
A caravan.
Windows has won.
It killed Linux forever.
Forever?
And ever.
So the reason why you picked Linux instead of BSD is what?
Madness.
The penguin logo.
For lulz. Trolling.
Because you are stupid. Since we BSD people do not want stupid people in our community, I'm glad you picked Linux instead of BSD.
That guy sounds cool.
From an efficiency standpoint, 2 weeks and Fortnite have the same amount of syllables. And what?
A haiku. Days.
I have no idea.
Oh, and we use it in America or something.
And you don't sound like a pretentious Shakespearean douchebag. Grown British men who, what, make me smile.
Use Linux. Don't use Linux.
Grown British men.
Don't have girlfriends.
Our politicians.
Scream about Python documentation. You're dead right about sound on Linux. It's what?
Ace.
Or sir.
A nightmare, a bloody nightmare. I demand that henceforth. Graham, what?
Morrison.
Put pants on his head and pencils up his nose and be made to go wibble.
Runs for office.
Comes into the office dressed.
Speaks in a falsetto. And finally, my family thought I was more than a little strange, shouting, what? Repeatedly at my speakers.
Pig ponies.
Start Pulse Audio, damn you.
This was last one, wasn't it? Naturally.
No, the answer is Valhalla.
Oh.
I think from Mike's previous one last thing about Red Hat codenames.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course.
And with such commentary, we come to the real end of our podcast. Don't forget, all the notes are on the website. And we're looking forward to reading your comments. Please post comments. We do read them all. We may laugh at some of them, but we read them all. Post them, and we'll hopefully see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.